Welcome to Between Two Aeroids. My name is Haley Grace, and I am your host. This is a podcast where we talk about houseplants and botany and everything in between. Today's episode's gonna be easing into it about basic houseplant care, tips, tricks, what to look for when you're buying your houseplant, what to look for when you're doing research on a houseplant you want. This doesn't just go for the more uncommon or tropicals, but also plants that have been in cultivation for decades. There was a huge houseplant boom in the 70s. Really cool to like look back at old pictures, either family or just retro pictures, and see like an aglaonema or a monstera or a pothos. Stay tuned. It's going to be a real fun episode. Hopefully you learned something new. And if you guys have anything else to add, I'm all ears. I do have an Instagram for this. It's Between Two Aeroids Podcast. Feel free to DM me on tips you have or opinions, questions, anything you have about this episode. I'm all ears. The first topic we're going to be talking about is plant type and their natural environment. So this is a great starting point when you're trying to look in for a new houseplant, understanding where your plant is native to and their natural conditions is a great start. Is it a humid place, an arid place? Is it tropical? Are they understory plants? Are they climbers? Are they part of the canopy of the forest? Another great tip is to kind of understand how long the plant has been in cultivation. It might not be able to live in home conditions, and it might need a humidity cabinet or a greenhouse if it's a plant that's only been in the plant trade for, let's say, 5 to a year. They have not become hardy, but there are some plants like the Schefflera, the other ones I mentioned earlier, Ags, Monsteras, all those other guys that have been in the plant trade for decades and have become more common to household conditions. And there's always an exception to the rule. So like with aglaonemas, Pictum tricolors need a crap ton of humidity. And they start to get leggy as they grow out. They don't keep that beautiful bouquet shape that most normal cultivars of aglaonemas have. Monsteras, the ones like Albos, have been around since the 70s. It's real cool. At my work, we have an old, I don't know if you would call it an almanac, but a book of just houseplant varieties and all the different families and phylums, and Albos have been around since like the 80s, and I don't know if they were as popular as they were before now. Sorry if you hear some rustling in the back. My kitty is just wanting all the snuggles, so she's right next to me. She just got spayed recently. But Albos have been around for a while. Thai constellations were made by humans. It's a human-made cultivar. So those guys are pretty hardy to your home conditions and will thrive, even though they're a more uncommon rare plant in the industry. Doing some research will always help. Doesn't have to be peer-reviewed journals. Doesn't have to be scientific article. But one or two reputable sources, .orgs, .edu, are always great. There's a lot of horticulture, I guess you would call them peer-reviewed journals, but they have a really interesting input on home conditions. Also, you can even look at patents. If the plant has been patented, for example, the Macaulay's Finale is patented, they'll give you a kind of a lowdown on the best conditions to grow them and how to make them look like you see on the Instagram. So checking Google patents, great place to look as well. The first actual like basic needs for a houseplant is light, water, fertilizing, humidity, depending on the type of plant, especially when you get into collecting more rare plants. Soil is also really interesting to look at. People's aeroid mixes have become really popular. But in talking about store-bought, all of that stuff. So we'll get into that. The first one I'm going to start with, though, is light. And medium, bright, indirect truly are all buzzwords. They don't actually describe to the person what it actually needs, because what people decide what bright, medium, indirect, low all means. But it does make it easier for the consumer to feel comfortable in purchasing the plant. I personally like to use time of light, and that's what I tell my customers, because it's less, say for like philodendron, I usually say about 4 to 5 hours of ambient light, just meaning you don't have to turn on supplemental lighting to read. And something with a cactus, I say at least 6 to 7, preferably 2 to 3 hours direct. And this can be really good timing because you can track the light in your home. It obviously changes with the seasons depending where you are. And another thing on light is, what exposure is that window? Is it a southern exposure where you get that ambient light all day and maybe a couple hours direct here and there? Or, I mean, if you're in the southern hemisphere, it's switched. Or is it eastern where you're getting that nice, not as intense morning light? Well, western, you're going to get that really intense late day sun that's hot. And that's important because you don't want your leaves to burn. And if you give them that really hot, intense late day sun, depending on the plant, if they have a thinner leaf also, that's a good indication that they will burn in very high light that's intense. And if they have thinner leaves, more than likely they'll like the eastern light better. And most plants can get direct sun. It's something you might have to play with. Knowing your exposure is a good place to start. Having it a couple feet back from the window and seeing if you can slowly move it closer to that window to give it more light when in that direct sun. And then once you see a little bit of mechanical damage, meaning just burns, scrapes, scratches on your leaves, you can say, okay, I can go a foot back. I can move it a little bit further back. Those are just some kind of tips. I did have a customer ask me once, do all plants need light? And yes, all the plants you're going to find in your local nurseries, big box stores, everything, they need light. Future episode, we can do plants that don't live without light and kind of get into that fun stuff. Even ZZs, even snakes, even plants people suggest for low light conditions, they need light. You can't just put a plant in your bathroom with no windows and hope that it's going to be okay. A little tip and trick, possibly turn one of those lights the light bulbs into a grow light. You can buy them at Home Depot. If your local plant stores to support local sells them, but just turning one or two or even all of the bulbs into grow lights, and they're just little bulbs, so it's aesthetically pleasing. You can even do this in home where your plant's not getting a lot of light. You could put a nice little lamp, like a decorative lamp, and change that bulb into a grow light. You can even look up the specifications of like lumens of normal lights that would provide the same quote unquote sun power for your plants if you didn't want to go the grow light bulb. I'm not 100% sure on what they are, but all plants do need light. The ones you're going to find in your nurseries and big box stores. And depending on what light you're giving it is also going to kind of tell you how often you're going to water it. If you're giving your plant ample light, you should be watering about once every 7 to 10 days. Most plants in home conditions do not like to dry out. And I find that this is why people have trouble with succulents and cacti, because you'll put them in your highest light in your home. And where I am, it's super, super unhumid. It's quite a dry climate. We probably get the most humidity when it snows. But if you let your cacti and succulents dry out all the way, and it's 3 months later, Those roots, especially the feeder roots, which take up most of the nutrients and water, will dry and shrivel up, and then you introduce water and they dissolve, basically. Kind of understanding the anatomy and the workings of a plant, we can't see their roots, but just keeping the soil moist to the touch. You don't have to use your finger necessarily. A chopstick's a really great houseplant tool. It should always look like a very moist cake or brownie. Some should be sticking to the chopstick or your finger. If you're using a chopstick, you can even see the water intake of the wood. And then once it's looking like a dry brownie or cake, where there's only a couple pieces sticking to it and it's barely changed in terms of color, give it a drink. You can even wait to the next day to give it a drink, but give it a drink within the next 1 to 2 days. I don't recommend moisture meters because sorry to break your all's hearts, they do not measure the moisture. They measure the salt content in the water the salt content in the soil, and whatever electricity moves through water when there's a conductor such as salt. And so if you're using high fertilizer, if you have your plant in a terracotta pot, it's going to read high, even though you're like, I can see that it's dry with my eyes. Trust your senses. They are better than the moisture meter. So that's why I always suggest to use either your finger or a chopstick. Go to the dollar store, buy 100 chopsticks. And the reason you want to keep your plants moist, I understand that cactus live in arid climates where it maybe only rains for maybe 3 to 4 weeks out of the year. But you're trying to give them optimal conditions to grow. And they're made 96% of water. If you open up your aloe and you see in it, it's all this white, juicy stuff. That's mostly water with some different minerals, compounds in it. And so when you're giving it optimal conditions, you want to supply it with everything. Yes, things can tolerate a drought. Just like you can tolerate being poked for an hour, you're not going to like it, and you're probably going to tell the person, please stop. So you shouldn't really do that to your plants. This isn't keeping your plants sitting in water for weeks on end in a closet or with very minimal light. And that's why I was saying light has a lot to do with it, because if you have low light, it's probably not going to dry out as quickly. Honestly, your plant is probably not going to thrive or grow as quickly. It will still look nice, but just using your senses is truly the best way to understand what your plants need. Also, understanding your soil is really important. So if you bought from a trusted nursery or a trusted grower, I'm going to guarantee you that they're not going to put crappy soil into it. If they do, ask them about it. Their job is to grow these plants to look the best and healthiest. So they're not going to put it in crappy soil. And what is crappy soil? Something that has no aeration, which orchid bark can help with, perlite can help with, but a very compact, dense mix is just going to keep wet all the time. At my store, we use a lot of like a 40-60 mix of perlite and Canadian peat moss. And I mean, it takes, once this gets wet, it's nice. But when it's dry, you're there with a hose for like 5 minutes just waiting for it to moisten up. And you think you got it all, and then you mix it together and nope, it's still dry. So just trusting your nursery. Big box stores, I probably would wait 2 or 3 weeks to take out the soil and plant it into a soil you trust. I have a little bit of a problem with Miracle-Gro because they do use these little crystals that go in diapers to absorb moisture in their soil, which I'm just going to say it's probably not the best for your plants, even though it can help quote unquote moisture control. Again, that chopstick, your finger, best moisture control, moisture meter, your eyes, your senses. They also knowing the soil you need for your special your plant. If it's a special plant, something more exotic, tropical, maybe hasn't been in cultivation for a long time, you might want to go ahead and give it a specialty soil. Right now, I have my Clarinervium Anthurium growing in spag because the soil I had it in, just the roots weren't going crazy. I think the spag helps with the little humidity dome a little bit more because it holds moisture better. But other things I have just in that store, when I don't really mix my own soil. I just use what we have at the store. And things are growing well. I do need to repot some of my plants because they are a little bit round. But just making sure that the soil is not staying wet for long periods of time, even though you haven't watered it, it's a good indication you need to change up your soil. Truly, with soil, money talks. So if you're getting cheap soil, it's going to be cheap soil because they're not using the best ingredients. And when you buy nice soil, I'm not saying, I used black gold once, and I do not think it's any different than Fox Farm, which I can buy for half of the price. I really love Fox Farms because they do have added, I can't say the word, micros. They add bacteria in it that's good for your plant and helps create good soil for you and a microbiome in your soil. You don't want your soil to be sterile forever because there's a lot of inner workings. We'll actually get into that later with fertilizer and pest control. But there's a lot of inner workings of little different bacterias that are helping make beneficial fungi for your roots that will create a better root system for you and a stronger root system that will have basically a stronger immune system against something else. Just kind of with your own tummy. I know probiotics, people take those often. It's truly the same thing that you're doing for your soil. You're giving it a good start for it to explode and work for you instead of against you. With Fox Farms, you are getting a really good starting point for even fertilizing your plants. I go with organic fertilizers because inorganic fertilizers are only available immediately to the plant. So whatever that soil can hold on to is what it's going to use as fertilizer. When you use inorganic, it sits in the soil and the soil breaks it down into things your plants can use. And that's going to stay in there for longer than immediately used chemicals. It's kind of like when you take vitamins and you eat the vitamin and you pee out the rest of it your body doesn't need because it's not sitting in there and making your body work for what it needs. It's just giving it to it right away and then it metabolizes out everything else it doesn't. And also putting inorganic fertilizers down the drain just creates more waste into our waterways. It's how we have heavy algae blooms, even stuff growing inside of the sewer that naturally happens, but the inorganic fertilizer gives them all of those tools to do it so much quicker because, again, they don't have to work for the phosphorus, the nitrogen, the potassium. It's there for them. It's just right there. And then whatever they don't need, on to the next. Organic fertilizers that I have used in the past are fish emulsion and worm castings. I stopped using fish emulsion because I don't know if mine expired, but it became insane how much fungus was growing on my topsoil, which isn't always bad, but also the smell of fish emulsion, especially if you're letting your plant drink up a day or two after you water. Like ficus love to drink for longer than a day, especially when they're more in tree form. They are very thirsty. And that smell, there's a lot of things I can handle. But when I walk and I'm like, oh my God, what is that? And then I'm like, oh, I fertilized 2 days ago. I just couldn't do it anymore. So I started using worm castings. Not the easiest application. I have tried to make the worm tea, and I know you can buy worm tea pre-mixed and you just use it as like a liquid fertilizer. But when I try and do it with just my hard worm castings, it never fully dissolves. And so I just have a bunch of worm castings stuck in my watering can's spigot. But if you add it to your top layer of your soil about half an inch and then just give it a little scritchy scratch on the topsoil and you just water and do it every 3 months, whew, the growth of my plants. And also, fun fact, like I was saying earlier, the little microbiome that's creating in your soil from all the fertilizers and good compounds that you're giving it, it helps the soil produce chitinase, which is an enzyme that breaks down chitin. And chitin is what fungus gnats, mealies, scale, thrips, any of that stuff is made out of. So I saw an insane decrease in my fungus gnats. Antidote I have is with my old roommate. She saw me putting sticky traps, and like the sticky traps work, but they only catch the adult form, so you really have to keep up on it. She's like, oh, the sticky traps are really working. Like, I haven't seen one of the fruit flies, she called them, in a while. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess so. And then I look at the sticky traps, and there really weren't any on there. And I think it's actually because I was starting to use worm castings on all my plants. And I'm telling you, I went months without a fungus gnat hanging out at my head at night when I'm just scrolling. Definitely been lacking right now just because I'm in the middle of a move for the second time in 2 months. But I definitely need to get back on it because those little buggers are annoying me. They're getting into my cat's little water fountain. I'm just like, stop finding water. Fertilizer, I'm good with organics. They help a lot more than what we can see. There's some really good ones out there that are pre-mixed that aren't fish emulsion. I think liquid dirt is a organic fertilizer, but I'm not 100% sure, so do not quote me. That is going into pests with the fungus gnats. I have stopped completely using neem oil, systemics, and other chemical fertilizers since I got my little kitten. She's not a kitten. She's like a year, but I call her a kitten because she's a kitten in my eyes, and she always will be. I mean, you can't watch your dogs or your cats 24/7, and if you just treated a plant with neem oil and your dog, say, licks it, it is a toxin. Same with a systemic. If you have kids that might play with the soil or your dog or cat eats the plant, that systemic goes into the actual plant matter of your plant and has toxins and chemicals that can harm small children and small animals. That's enough for me to not use it. I mean, it's like with the natural deodorant. We learned about aluminum. I personally saw that my lymph nodes in my armpit had gone down after using more natural deodorant. Dr. Teals, shout out to you because you're the only one that I've ever used that works. I've definitely tried making my own, and there's a lot of baking powder or baking soda in it, and I just feel like fuzzy all day, if that makes sense. Scratchy, I guess, is a better word for it. Soap and water, my go-to. Maybe a little bit of alcohol if I'm spraying the leaves. The reason isopropyl alcohol is really great is spider mites' webs are actually hydrophobic. So unless you're hitting them with a hard spray, just a soap and water solution won't harm their web. It will harm the spider mites. And how soap and water works is it increases the surface tension on their breathing pores. So they basically suffocate to death. With scale, it's definitely more of a loosener since they do have that hard shell like a turtle. And dunk the whole plant. Dunk it all. Just the pot. This is why I keep all my plants in nursery pots as well. The pot, the soil, the plant. You can even put a little bit of like old newspaper or some type of paper you're not using anymore on top of the soil and just tape that atop of the, dunk it all in. It will save your bathtub from a bunch of dirt and your drains from a bunch of dirt. And then just give it a real good soak, 10-15 minutes. You can even leave the soap on for a little bit. I wouldn't put it in direct sun because it might burn. And then just give it a really good wash. And if you have a really bad infestation, I probably would do that for 2 months every week. If you're seeing less of a population, you can go down to biweekly or even monthly. But as a good preventative, just putting it this solution in a spray bottle, and it's about a 1 to 10, 1 soap, 10 water, just so you get those good suds and you can kind of smell the soap, and just preventing by doing it, wiping your leaves with that. Leaf shine's great for industrial purposes. If you have like 300, well, some of you do have 300 plants, and I understand that. Leaf shine won't always do the best that soap and water can do for pest. And so just wiping leaves back front, getting the sinuses of the leaf, which is just where the petiole and the leaf itself meet. You can see them kind of look like butts and like monsteras. Some monsteras, philodendron, skindapsis, all that fun stuff. And just doing that. Side note on pest, I know a lot of people have alocasia that gets spider mites. Anytime you're moving your alocasia, you put it in a stressful situation, so you forgot to water it for a little bit, you just brought it home, they send out a pheromone that attracts spider mites when they are stressed. And so they become magnets for it, even if you have not had a spider mite in your collection at all. So again, preventative is better than fighting them. Just being on top of it, being ahead of it, so much better than, oh crap, this happened, and now it's on all of my plants. And a good sign of pest problems is looking on new growth. So scales is an exception, actually. They will go to new growth the heaviest, but they're pretty sedentary. No, that's a rock type. They're pretty sedentary in terms of not moving a bunch, so you will find them on older growth. But things like thrip will hide in the cataphyll of plants. They'll hide in rolled up plants, like the new leaf that's still rolled. Mealies love new growth. Spider mites love new growth, but they'll still hang out on the old growth because they're like, I'm going to suck all the life out of this until I'm done. So looking at your new growth is really a great place to start in seeing if your plant has a problem. And this even goes for root rot. A lot of people get afraid of root rot and thinking lower leaves falling off is an indication of root rot. You will find that your new growth will come out brown and mushy, and that's an indication of root rot. I had it on my RT. Luckily, she bounced back. Root rot isn't older leaves yellowing and dying off. That's usually the plant got dry for too long and then cut off circulation to the older growth to save it for the new growth. I mean, they're there to live and survive, and if they're not getting everything they need, they're not going to be a full bushy plant. They're going to become stemmy, leggy, long, and just try and reach to the sun as far as they can. So just being aware that if you're seeing yellow leaves on a healthy plant, maybe see if you let it dry out a little bit. And it usually takes a week to 2 weeks for them to show that yellow, because they're still going to get the nutrients they need out of that. Well, that is all I have for you guys today. I really appreciate you joining me. I'm excited for this. This was an easy one for me to start with. I'm excited to do more kind of in-depth ones and try and break down some of these insane peer-reviewed journals I've been reading for you guys and make botany more fun and accessible to everyone, because like we have all these plants and they're awesome and freaking great, and they've made me appreciate life so much on just holy crap, the world, nature, Mother Nature is insane. And I always quote Jurassic Park, she's freaking resilient, life will find a way to live. And it's just so much that these plants have taught me about how to care for myself and how to care better for the world, and just cultivating a love for what was given to us through millions of years of evolution. Yeah, stay tuned for other episodes. They will be coming out probably every Monday or Tuesday. I haven't had a set schedule. Do you like this? Please give me a follow on Instagram so I can connect with you guys and talk with you guys, and we can really make this a community. And I can actually do episodes you guys are interested in on learning. I would love to interview some botanists in specialized fields, talk about houseplants through and through, nurseries, all of that stuff. Just kind of everything in this community. It's a really great community, and I love y'all. Talk to you later. Come listen. Keep loving your plants. This has been Between Two Aeroids with Haley Grace. Have a great day, or night, or evening, or middle of the day, wherever you are. Bye.